This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Guest today is Legal Man, who states that he is America's most trusted lawyer and America's most beloved attorney. We met, so to speak, on Twitter, and I share his values, I share his views. It's been very interesting listening to all of his podcasts. He has I will have him tell you about it. But he has a Patreon account, and he is just a very interesting gentleman. And his website is thetruthaboutthelaw.com. Legal Man, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Oh, it's so fun to have you. And I'm currently in the Twitter jail because I posted something this morning about something that I had posted before. It was a video that I had posted, and it was talking about Bill Gates, and the post was, "Did you catch that? Bill Gates admitted that the vaccines were genetically modified, meaning that they, quote unquote, have changed a natural virus into a patented GMO virus from which they can make a GMO vaccine and billions of dollars in lifelong patients." Now, I don't see anything wrong with that, right?
And they're really cracking down on the people who want to vary off from the official narrative on the vaccine. Wow, I mean, they're just shutting any and all possible information about that out.
Right. I have seen posts about vaccines that they're not good. But when you talk about the fact that they actually, you can't patent anything that is natural.
Right.
The only way that you can get a patent on anything, like GMO corn or soy or something like that, is that you have to genetically modify it. But who would imagine that they would genetically modify a virus and then create a vaccine? So I looked up all of the numbers associated with the patent, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
And
wow.
So it's
the whole idea that that's an invention is bogus anyway. I think they did that in the 80s. I think that was the Rehnquist court. But the idea that any of these biologicals, these types of things where they go in, they make some little tiny tweak to corn or soy or some crap, and then they call it an invention. Really, it's not really an invention. I mean, They did a little tiny change to something. It's not really, you know, if you have an invention and someone changes the invention, okay, well then, yeah, you can kind of patent on that. But they didn't invent any of these biologicals. None of them are invented. This is silly.
Right. Yeah, absolutely, you're right. We have a lot in common. You talk about the Constitution a lot, or you tweet about the Constitution. We also both really appreciate Lysander Spooner. I'm a big fan. When I was writing my trilogy, I referred to his work. And people keep saying, "Oh, the Constitution protects our right to free speech, and it protects our right to this and that." So give us your views of why we are not living under the Constitution and why not.
Well, you know, there's so many facets to it. Step one would be that it's been so fundamentally changed, even if you want to assume that the original thing was properly ratified and could ever have any kind of authority, you know, that just changing the way the Senate is, quote, elected or put in, which they did through a constitutional amendment, through lying to people about what it would end up doing, that alone just fundamentally changed the structure of the system. If you want to say that the system was intentionally designed as a way as to have a, say, a federal form of government where you have these kind of states getting together and then you also have a federal government. So the states have power and the federal government has some power. Well, the Senate, the concept behind it was, you know, you'd have the House of Representatives, or is the House of Representatives, as they call it, an idiocracy. But you have the House of Representatives, which would be the people, and then you have the Senate. And the Senate was supposed to really just be something that represented the states independently, not the people, the states. And as soon as you change that and you make the election of senators a statewide event, well, anybody can look at the Senate and see that it's just got the most corrupt, impossible to pry out of there people, because so much money can pour in because it's each state only gets two of them. And so I would say that as when you have that as a fundamental, that's a very fundamental change that people are lied to about. And the other one is that the founders knew that the Supreme Court was not a star chamber, that when it ruled, that everybody had to then follow that ruling for the rest of time unless you get a constitutional amendment. They all knew that. There was absolutely no question about that. And everybody knows the famous Andrew Jackson quote about, well, you know, he's given his opinion, now let him enforce it. You know, they impeached one of the justices very early in the early 1800s for having ridiculous political opinions, for just ignoring a law and writing a bunch of political crap. And they knew that the court was not in charge of everybody. And if you look at the way the country runs now and what actually happens in it, the vast majority of the tyranny comes down through this court system that we all supposedly have to obey. And that fundamental misunderstanding about that is just, it's just huge. I tell people all the time that the Supreme Court had a case back in the middle, late sort of 19th century, and it was a gun control, supposedly, case, and a state had passed a law, and they were attempting to restrict guns, and the basis was that it was post-Civil War, you know, that these people were ganging up and going after these newly freed blacks, and it was outrageous, and it was a civil rights problem. And the Supreme Court stepped in, and it held that, look, the federal government, when it tries to make these kind of rules, which this one of these things was a federal deal, they just said you can't do it. That all these gun controls, it doesn't matter what the reason for it is, that's all left to 100% of the states. The federal government can do absolutely nothing about it. It's a very, very clear opinion on that, and there's almost no gun control sort of cases that come out of the Supreme Court. Really, the very next one that was held wasn't for another 50 or 60 years. But just think of all the legislation now that pours out as a result of these sort of Supreme Court opinions on what they call the Second Amendment. Well, you know, that doesn't work. If you allow them to start creating these exceptions and rules and connections, well, that's just the government telling the government what the government can do. And that can never work. There's no system where the government can tell the government whether or not the government can do it and at the same time be the situation we're told, which is that the people are in charge. It doesn't, those, don't go together. And that's something that Spooner just pointed out so perfectly.
Right. You excuse me. You brought up the name Andrew Jackson. And people, even in the so-called alternative media, think, oh, what a great guy. Boy, he was so terrific. And yet his actions, and they didn't think he was so terrific for probably 50 years afterward, where somebody found this book that he supposedly wrote. He was responsible for the 1837 economic financial crises. He was working for the Rothschilds. They rewarded him greatly. And yet now he's some sort of a hero that said that he was going to destroy the bankers. Well, he probably did. He destroyed the bank. But it's because Rothschild said, hey, this is what we would like you to do. And that's what he did. So.
It's typical. That doesn't surprise me. What I would always say is that anything we've got in the history books at this point is probably garbage. Any official history books, they're always upside down. The only reason I use anybody like a Jackson is that, one, he was a legit, I think, at least I suspect, from what I can tell, he was a legit kind of war hero to the extent that he was, I mean, he led from the front. That guy, he was a dangerous man. And like all quotes from history, whether or not the quote's even true, like all the Lincoln quotes and everything else, it doesn't matter ultimately. The only thing that matters to me is what is the substance of the quote. And I use people like that whenever I reference it, is because otherwise, unless I'm talking to somebody who really knows what's going on, like you, or this teeny tiny fraction of the population, then you have to go back and explain a whole narrative. So I just simply use someone like that and a quote like that. It's if the story, the narrative about him was true, okay, then that's the purpose. I can't go back and explain to people what may or may not have happened. I mean, the founding fathers themselves, they're nothing like what the people imagine. But
right.
I still have to go back and say they wanted freedom, because that's the story people are given.
Right. Even Benjamin Franklin was a, he belonged to a club, and John Wayne Gacy, who we all know had a lot of bodies and things buried under his home, same thing, you could apply the very same thing to Benjamin Franklin.
I've heard about this.
The Hellfire Club, yes. He belonged to the Hellfire Club. And they did people in and buried their bodies, and now he's some sort of a hero that you could compare him to John Wayne Gacy, who was a terrific, horrible person whose home was destroyed. Nobody would ever want to live there, of course. So history has a tendency to clean people up quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
In order for us to accept what they did, even though what they did was usually for their own benefit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the idea, it's just, it still blows my mind when I interact with people who genuinely think there are politicians up there in Washington or the State House who actually have their best interest and were up there trying to help them. It's mind-bending. I mean, I don't understand how any thinking, rational person can believe that somebody is going to Washington to actually help other people. That just fundamentally is almost impossible for me to get my mind around. You have the person out of 70 IQ, okay, I could understand, but otherwise intelligent people who genuinely think there are politicians who are, quote, fighting for them, what hope is there to get things straightened out when you have to overcome a situation where there are tens of millions of people who actually believe that on both sides of the aisle? You know what I mean? On the people on both sides, both sides are just as delusional about their candidates. It's some form of, it's just some form of deep brainwashing. I'd love to know what accounts for something like that. And don't you find that surprising that anybody could actually believe that?
I really do. My previous guest talked about this, that really all of the people, you have to be criminal in order to even qualify as for a political office. We have this illusion that we get a choice. But who selected these candidates to begin with? They have to have a criminal history. They have to be corrupt before they even go to Washington. And you have done a lot of talking, tweeting about the fact that the things that have occurred in the last year could never have occurred under a Democrat Party
right.
president.
Correct.
Tell us why you believe that. It's very obvious, but go ahead.
Yeah, see, when it very first broke out, I was really, really concerned on literally day one. And as soon as this stuff started happening, it was very clear to me that but for Donald Trump being this sort of Republican, so-called populist type of guy, that's his reputation, that the people believe he's up there fighting to clean the deep state, all this other crap out, they believe that. And because of that, the people in the, quote, red states and the governors in the red states and all the different people who are running around pretending to be libertarians and constitutional conservatives and all this other stuff, well, that's their guy. So long as that's their guy, they're going to be okay with it. Now, all these restrictions and liberty and all the crazy amounts of money they're spending and all the other stuff that Trump pushed all this time, the masks, this absurd stuff with Fauci, just think of all the restrictions closing down these places. If any of that had been going on under Hillary Clinton, if she'd even tried any of it, there would have been massive pushback in the red states. And you're seeing it now. I hoped and predicted that if Trump lost, and then after he lost, the only thing I clung on to was, okay, well, look, at least if you're in a red state, now the politicians are going to have to push back. And you're already seeing it. You're already seeing these politicians in these red states passing laws like against the transgender stuff so that they aren't going to enforce that. We're not going to enforce these unconstitutional executive orders. They're all stepping up, and now you see a guy like DeSantis, and they're all kind of pretending that they are fighting against it, because even though the restrictions and the outrages under Trump were ridiculous, they were okay because it was their guy. And so they believed that they maybe must be necessary. They're still okay. And I think that but for Trump, there is no chance we could be in a situation where it, none, zero chance, because the only reason that any of this has been possible in all these states is because of that National Declaration of Emergency that Trump signed and then re-upped again in October. Because that is the procedural mechanism that unlocks the floodgates of all this federal money. And all that federal money, the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that's poured out into states in 1,000 different ways as a result of that, is what has allowed the states who are blue states to keep people locked down even more. They're all being massively subsidized. The businesses, the governors, the states, all the unemployment stuff. None of that could happen. The country would have blown up if there wasn't federal money flowing out by, really, the rate is about $1 trillion a month to support this insanity. And there was just no way constitutional conservatives in media and government could have allowed Hillary Clinton as president to wheel out someone as much of a loser as Tony Fauci is, with his criminal records that guy has at the CDC for the last 40 years. And there's no way that people would have supported it. They would have seen it for what it was. But because it was presented by the red team, they were on board. It's just crystal clear.
And it was to me too. I thought, okay, the first thing that he should have done was, of course, to get rid of Fauci.
Right.
To get rid of other organizations. But instead, he kept him on. Okay, we're going to a break. We will be back momentarily with our guest, Legal Man. Be right.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, welcome back. I love that song. One of my listeners provided that to me a few years back, and it just epitomizes how I feel. Our guest is Legal Man, and I always want to say, "Hey, Legal Man."
Well, then you should.
And tell us, before we continue with our conversation, tell us about your Patreon account, how people can listen to you, and because you've kind of backed off at Twitter, as we all have been forced to do, but tell us how we can listen, how people, the listeners, can listen to your...
Well, if they want to hear some of my stuff, my show is called The Quash, and they can find it really on any podcast player. It's pretty much on any major podcast player. They can do that. They can find me at Twitter. I'm still there. I go on. I just don't respond as much. I just kind of just don't spend as much time doing that. If they like that, then they can go on there and get me there. I'm LegalMan@US Law Review, and I post all my stuff there. And there's a place there you can also find where my podcast plays. And I've got them. There's got a huge amount. They're free. Yeah, I have a Patreon account. If people end up liking my stuff, they can come over and go in there. But, you know, they need to kind of decide if they like the material, and if they want to support the show, then great. And I tell them how to do it on any of the shows. So if they listen to some of the shows, if they like them, then they'll find their way over there.
Good. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Now we were talking about,
Fauci,
who was responsible for the AIDS epidemic,
right,
quote unquote. And, he's a piece of garbage.
He's terrible. He's the only reason he's spoken about so highly in these academic circles is because he was the money man. He was in charge of deciding which institutions and researchers and things like that got what was the biggest money grab in the history of the world when it comes to funding and financing of this AIDS, made-up AIDS nonsense, another viral nonsense. And he's been behind all of them, and is... The idea that Donald Trump was unaware that the people that advised Donald Trump could have ever been unaware of what a snake Tony Fauci was is not credible to me. Because if he had people, if either Trump or his advisors were so incompetent, they didn't know about Tony Fauci and his really disgraceful record, then they have no business being in that position. And the idea that they're ever going to help the people and clean out the deep state, it's just a fantasy, because Fauci was the worst. I mean, I knew day one, I'm sure you did too, as soon as I realized, well, Tony Fauci, what? That guy sucks. And the reality is, it wasn't that Trump just was ignorant about it. Let's just assume that the guy didn't even know about it day one. It was week after week after week, people forget, of those daily ridiculous, they called them press conferences. They weren't even that. They were like an infomercial for Pfizer and these other people. And he would wheel out Tony Fauci every single day and praise him as the most brilliant man with the most brilliant team, pushing this stuff every day, told everybody what a brilliant man he was and how great the team was. I mean, if he had been on our side, he would have fired Tony Fauci. He would have said the CDC doesn't control anything anyway. It's up to individual doctors to decide with their own patients what they do. If he'd spoken some truth as opposed to just pushing this ridiculous nonsense where they centralized all the control with the CDC guidelines, never bothered to take any of these people's deposition, get them sworn in, find out what their actual positions are, just putting them up on the stage time after time, just pushing this nonsense every single day. That's the kind of brainwashing that I'm talking about, that you were asking about earlier, about with regards to there's no way I could have done it without Trump. Because if Hillary Clinton had come up there and pushed Tony Fauci, everybody would have looked into Tony Fauci and said, Tony Fauci sucks. And if it's Hillary Clinton, if that's Hillary Clinton's man, then we know he sucks. But again, because it's Trump and he's telling it, so all that stuff just went away. I mean, it was just, I couldn't believe what was happening when I was watching. In fact, that insanity last spring was why I started my podcast. Because I could not believe what I was saying. I could not believe this was going on.
Well, for one thing, the FDA, the CDC, are unconstitutional, as you pointed out. All the ABC agencies of the government were created for corporate interest. And the other thing, too, about Fauci is that Trump would just stand there, and then he said, oh, and I'm going to withhold money from the World Health Organization. He turned right around and gave it to Bill Gates' Gavi.
Right. I mean, I understand it's just right in front of people's faces.
Yes, very, very overt. And then he started talking about warp speed delivery by the military. Which made me think of the military back in 1898 invaded the Philippines. They had a bunch of leftover smallpox vaccines that they didn't use here in the United States. Just a bunch of leftovers. The U.S. military invaded the Philippines. And the people, the residents, had never experienced smallpox ever. They were a native virgin population. There were a lot of the Filipinos that went into the forest and avoided the vaccine. They did this in 1898, vaccinated all these people. Hundreds of people died. There was an epidemic in 1905, 1907, 1910. And so when people look at history, which we must do, history is prologue. When people look at history, then they can get an idea of what is going on now. But it's much easier to do it now because they have the media to indoctrinate and brainwash people. And people don't think, they don't look at history, they believe everything they're told in the government schools. I would not put my children, if I had known then what I know now, I would never have sent my children to a government school.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, you know, until the internet came along 20 years ago, really, it was very, very difficult to get independent information. You just had to rely on just kind of your own sense of, well, that doesn't really seem to make any sense, but there's really no way to go do counter research until you have, you know, there's research in these academic institutions and stuff, but that's a very specialized field to learn how to do that kind of research and having access to one. But, you know, the last 20 years, it's available to anybody. This is the part that's amazing to me. And you can watch in real time. I remember that Obama birth certificate crap. When that came out, when it broke, as soon as the story broke, within 10 days, that's when they got Osama bin Laden, because the story was really starting to pick up speed. And they, of course, there was never going to be a defense to it, so they had to simply wipe it away. And I give it as an example to people of, you talk about history, what will go down in history about that birth certificate? That it was obviously fake, and he's got that bogus Social Security number, and there's something very suspicious. No. All that will happen in the history books will be some racist accused him of not being a citizen, and there was nothing to it. That's what the history books, in kind of a footnote, will say about that incident. That's how totally and efficiently they can cover something up that you can just live through and see. And that's why when you think about history like you do, where you go back and kind of do these revisionist research history stuff, you find all this stuff that's been kind of covered up. Well, you can watch it in real time happen. And that's what people need to learn, is that if they're being presented a narrative, it's not true. If the government's telling you a narrative, it's not true. It's just not.
Right, especially since Fox News and other media outlets announced in December of 2001 that Osama bin Laden passed away from kidney failure in a U.S. hospital. They announced it, and yet people
have
been
very short,
very short, a very
dead all the time. Right.
Right. It's just amazing.
Not to mention that the pictures they showed of him over the years were clearly
yeah.
not the same person, and he got younger. It was so blatant.
Well, Obama needed a distraction because he was losing some popularity. He needed a distraction to take away from the birth certificate issue. And the media, of course, plays along with all of this.
Oh, yeah. Well, think about the team that supposedly killed him, right? That got Osama bin
Laden. Yeah! They were
taken out in a helicopter crash in like the next week.
Right!
And then they
claimed. Nobody asked?
Nobody asked. And then they claim that the person that shot them down was then taken out. I mean,
right.
How can you possibly know? The story's ludicrous on its face. It's ridiculous. Then they tell people that the reason they had to dump his body overboard on, they couldn't, there's no way to confirm any of it. Oh, they couldn't upset the Muslim population. But they show the endless pictures of Gaddafi having a Christmas tree knife shoved up his rear end over and over, bloodied and beaten. They show that all the time. Well,
right.
Why isn't that going to rile up the Muslims? But the inconsistencies, they never end. But people just don't ask questions. They just don't
right.
ask questions.
Exactly. Even the, okay, so supposedly, 9/11, supposedly the Saudi Arabia is the one that had these, these people with box cutters.
Oh yeah.
19 of them, they took over. And so what does the U.S. government do? They invade Afghanistan and Iraq. What does that have to do? Well, it has to do with illegal drugs, which the government has been in business of importing illegal drugs way before Vietnam. The elites have always been in charge of creating a drug-dependent population. Even going back to China.
Those opium wars.
Yes, two of them. And I woke up in 1973 when the Supreme Court said that it was okay to kill babies. And I thought, wait a minute. Wait just a whole darn minute here. And I remember going to the church that I belonged to at the time. And I was just really very upset. And I talked to a couple of people, and it was like talking to the wall. They were just, well, if the Supreme Court said it was okay, then, but that was 55 million babies ago, 58 million
right.
maybe.
Right. And that's a great case. You know, it's such a good example. I use it a bunch with people. of this concept that the Supreme Court somehow can just make this ruling to a Jane Doe in one case, and then now somehow everybody has to follow it. And I point out to people that the, not only is Pena complete garbage, but when the Constitution was ratified, abortion was illegal. It was a crime in every single state that ratified the Constitution. And the same after the so-called Civil War, when they had to so-called re-ratify at the point of a gun, it was a crime. So to say that it's unconstitutional for a state to prohibit abortion because it violates the Constitution is completely and totally nonsensical. Whether or not you believe in abortion or don't, it's irrelevant. The purpose of it is that there's no possible way that the Supreme Court opinion either could be valid or that it could possibly bind the states, because it doesn't make sense with what we know. Undisputed facts.
Right.
It's just garbage. Forget the fact that it was, I think, a 5-4 decision, and it makes no sense. They rested the entire opinion on what they called emanations from penumbras, which just means vagaries coming out of a cloud. It's just insane that people accept this stuff and just are ruled by a star chamber.
Right. Excuse me. If you go back to the Constitution, which Lysander Spooner talks about a lot, there was a group of people, an elite group of people, who got together and they created a document which they called, well, I don't know whether they called it that, but it was the Constitution. And people there consented to it. And it only applied to the elite. When it says we the people, they were talking about themselves. And so that piece of paper is now supposed to be the paper that we are under directive, or that we are supposed to apply to ourselves. I didn't consent to it.
Right.
I was there. Women weren't allowed to vote.
Right.
Black. So talk to us about that. Yes.
Yeah. Well, almost nobody could vote. I mean, the idea that there you could ever have. Let's just assume that you could get every single person that was alive back then that was going to supposed to be ruled by this thing to consent to it. Let's just see you say it. Just imagine that could even happen, which it not even remotely did happen. The reason you could never, ever give valid consent to the so-called Constitution is because there are no known terms. See, the terms aren't knowable because you don't know the terms until the government kangaroo court tells you what they are. Abortion is a classic example. You're sitting around. You consent to it. You claim you consent to the Constitution. Okay. And you know you're in a state that also has supposed laws, and abortion is a crime in your state. And then you get the court telling you that the Constitution prohibits you from outlawing abortion. Well, those don't go together. Nobody would consent to it because there are no terms. If you ask 10 people in the street what any of these things mean, what it means to be able to control interstate commerce or the spending clause or anything else that's in there, you're not going to get agreement about it. And the very first thing you have to have before you can even talk about anything in a contract is you have to have terms. If you and I agree to something and you and I both have a very different idea of what the terms actually are, that's not actually a binding contract in the law. That's called that there's been no meeting in the minds, that you and I thought we had an agreement, but you thought I was going to pay you, and I thought you were going to pay me. So it's not that they now have a binding agreement with terms, it's that the terms were unclear, and we had a misunderstanding of terms, and therefore there is no consent, because you can't consent until you can at least know what the terms are. And if anything's become clear, it is that even if you just look at the red-blue divide in this country,
that there's just a totally and completely different idea amongst the people about whether or not something, quote, is constitutional or not. I mean, just the idea that the government can spend $1.9 trillion in a so-called stimulus package in order to just hand it out to people, is that part of the Constitution? If you ask liberals, they say yes. If you ask some people who are more libertarian, they'll say no. But a huge number of Republicans would just say, well, we shouldn't spend that much. Okay, well, again, there's no term. And so the idea that you could ever consent to it is impossible. You can't consent to it because it doesn't have any known terms. It doesn't have known terms. And getting consent, the very first step is you have to be able to know what the terms are. You have to. And you have to be able to say, okay, those are the terms. I don't agree to them. What would be the method, even if we had one today? What's the method to say, I don't consent to the terms of the Constitution? What is the method? There isn't one. You don't get a choice about consent. Again, consent must be voluntary and knowing. Every single time, it must be voluntary and knowing. Well, in order to have knowing and voluntary consent, you have to have terms, and you have to have the ability to say no. Well, we don't have either of them because we don't know what the terms are. You have to wait to find out, just like Nancy Pelosi said about that bill years ago. You got to pass a bill to find out what's in it. Okay, well, same thing with the Constitution. No one knows what it means. And if I say no thank you, does the Constitution, am I still bound to whatever they pass? Yes. Yes, I'm still bound. And so it's not, there's no ability to say, I don't care to consent. So there's just no possible legal argument that the Constitution is binding on people. It's just, it's, there's no way to make the argument make any sense in a legal sense. And they don't really attempt to. They just talk about things like social contract and these very vague terms, and they just mostly skip over that. Because when it's examined, when you actually examine it, it totally falls apart. And whenever you have a situation where a situation can't withstand scrutiny and it's on the government side, then they simply don't permit any scrutiny. And that's the situation with the Constitution and its validity. They just skip over it and they call it the law of the land. They just ignore what does it mean? How did it become the law of the land? And what are the parameters of what had to happen for that to happen? And they just say, well, there was a vote a couple hundred years ago by some people you never agreed to, and now you're bound to it forever. It's really, once you see how ludicrous it is, it's beyond ridiculous. And I never, ever have people who then turn and try to defend it on a legal basis. All they ever do is say, well, it's still the best system. What are you going to do? You got to do it. Still have it. Okay, well, that's a separate argument. It doesn't address the fact that there still is no consent and there are no terms. It doesn't address that.
Right. And we don't have the opportunity or the ability to consent to any of that. And the other thing too, and you've talked a lot about this, and I have written a lot about it, is the so-called civil war. Now, a civil war implies that there are two people fighting for control of a federal government or a one government.
Right.
So tell us your thoughts on the war of aggression against the South.
Yes. I mean, they call it the Civil War. It's complete nonsense. They confuse people by talking about how they fought to free the slaves, and then they talk about how America's about freedom. Okay, they talk about that. But the problem with all of it is that in a civil war, what's happening is there's parties, maybe two, maybe three, more, and they're all fighting for control of the same sort of landmass, people, and governmental structure. Then maybe they want to institute another governmental structure, but ultimately they're attempting to overthrow the government and become the new government for these people. Well, that wasn't the case in the Civil War. You had, they call it a rebellion. They call it all these different things. A rebellion makes people think, well, oh, you know, there's some pockets of resistance and, you know, some people burning down state houses. That's not what happened. What happened was the people in those states, they voted to leave. They said, we've had enough. We see where this is going. They voted to leave. Well, once that happens, it's completely and totally impossible to keep a voluntary union together through a war. Those are just a logical impossibility. There's no way to construct a sentence that makes sense where you say we have a voluntary union that's kept together by a war. That's not, you're not speaking English. You're not making sense at that point when you say that. But that's the ultimate ground that we're told, that we have a voluntary union and that we had a civil war that saved the union. That doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't matter what the war is about. It doesn't make any difference. Okay, let's just even assume they were fighting the free slaves, which is complete nonsense. But just assume it's the narrative is 100% true. That's fine. But you can't have a country that's a voluntary union where the people consent to be in it at the end of the war. All you can have is an empire that took over a certain landmass. That's all you can have. And to me, the proof positive that the situation was not as they claim, which is they were fighting a war to go down and free the slaves, is the fact that the war was, for the most part, after a very brief stint, was all fought in Southern territory. For all practical purposes, basically the entire war was fought down there. And there, that means all the men of fighting age, for all practical purposes, were all gone. They were all fighting the Union. Well, there weren't massive slave rebellions. If they were so anxious to rise up, they got people fighting on the other side. Why weren't there massive slave rebellions throwing them off when all the men of fighting age were gone? See, the whole, nothing about the narrative makes any sense, and you're not allowed to examine it because you're just shouted down and called a racist, and people say, well, you support slavery. I don't support slavery. I don't like slavery. I'm just pointing out inconsistencies in the narrative and pointing out that the narrative we're given about a voluntary union and a consent of the people in this country is a total impossibility after the Civil War. Whatever the Constitution ever was, it could not, it's an impossibility that it survives a Civil War, because you cannot keep a voluntary union together with a Civil War. It doesn't matter if it's a rebellion. It doesn't matter if it's a war of aggression. It makes no difference. The South was not attempting to get control of Washington, D.C. to tell the people in the North what to do. They simply were in the South, and the North came down and invaded them. Even the pretense for the war itself, the firing on Fort Sumter or some nonsense like that.
Which was a false flag. It was a false flag.
It's a made-up load of nonsense, because even if you just take it at its face value, okay? And once the state votes to leave, okay, it's left. They formed a new country. The idea that the North, the federal government, the United States, could then just keep naval and armed forces inside a fort in their territory, right in the middle of a fort, that itself is an act of aggression. It's asinine. There was no basis to stay there except that the North refused to accept the fact that these people had volunteered to leave. They voted and left. If your vote means anything, then it has to mean you have a right to leave.
Exactly. All righty, we will be right back. Guest is a legal man, and he is, we're talking about the so-called Civil War, and you did mention that most of the battles were fought in the South, which of course is, it speaks for itself. There were two battles fought in the North, the Gettysburg and Antietam, or Sharpsburg, and but all of the battles were in the South. The other thing is that this so-called Civil War did not free the slaves in the North. And slavery started in the North. It did not free the slaves up North. It only freed the slaves in the South. And nobody questions this.
Yeah, I mean, they run around this Emancipation Proclamation, which was just a PR event. That Lincoln dreamed up because the interest in the war was waning. He thought he would throw it out there. People don't understand. All he did was free slaves in Southern territory. He didn't free any slaves that the North controlled. So there was no net effect from it except a PR campaign. And the other thing is most of the slave, both traders and the financing, was all being done out of the North. And It was not like there were no slaves up there. You could never have gotten people to be excited about going down and going down to fight to free slaves. The racism and the interest in the North was horrible. They act like the North was so wonderful. It wasn't. And it was, nobody supports slavery today. At least I don't know anybody that does. But the point is you have to be able to have a rational discussion about what is the actual war about and what does that war say about what we're told the country is. They've completely turned it on head and made it seem like that was a war about freedom. And they confuse this concept of freedom and consent. Well, okay, yeah, ultimately some of the slaves got freed up. Okay, that's fine. I get it. But you did it without the consent of the other people. And so, again, the choice they had was go down, fight a war of aggression to go free slaves and then leave them alone or force them to now be inside the federal government or not fight the war and allow them to do what they want to do and leave since slavery was ending anyway. Well, it never would have survived anyway, but you can't run both of the narratives they do because they make no sense together that this country is about your vote being so sacred and the consent of the people, and that's what separates us from the different so-called tyrants around the world we run around and fight, and then have a situation where the North just abuses the South, goes through just burning and wiping out the towns. It was really the first sort of total war engaged on the civilians.
Right.
You can't have a both of those things. They don't make sense together.
Right. Because warfare before that was that two opposing sides got together on a battlefield and they attacked each other. Both sides were military. This was the first total war, and is considered total war when you attack a civilian population, which they did. Right. They went through, they burnt everything in sight. They burnt the food production, they burnt everything that was in sight, they burned, or yes, raped, or pillaged, or
stole.
Destroyed.
Stole.
Yes. Yes. Alrighty, we are at the top of the hour. We will be right back.
Network, because you can handle the truth.
All right, welcome back. This is Anna, and I just love that last commercial. Where John is talking about artillery and guns, and he gives a couple of phone numbers, and then he says, or just shoot him an email. And I think, what a great phrase to end a commercial on that talks about guns and artillery and ammunition. Shoot him an email. I don't know whether he did it on purpose, but it's really cool. Okay, we were talking about total warfare and the idea that it was okay to attack a civilian population spread from that point on. It sort of made it okay for the U.S. military to go into a country and attack civilians. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I think it's, I don't know if it made it okay, but they certainly use it as the precedent. And, you know, best I can tell, there's not even any discussion anymore about that whether or not this is in any way a legitimate tactic to be used, and there's never any attempt to justify in any kind of way these attacks that, you know, we engaged in certainly in the aerial bombing in World War II and the insanity that went on in Vietnam and everything since then. They just, you know, now they claim it's all targeted and stuff, but there's no doubt that the American Civil War as a very well-known sort of starting point for this insanity, and then, of course, they did it in a bunch of other places. The Boer War was kind of another war there that they really introduced a lot of these kind of terror tactics against the population. And it was really, I'm not going to say it was unknown before that, because it wasn't, but the vast majority of war and warfare was, you know, much more like you described, where, you know, you had these kind of, these groups of uniformed men who met on a battlefield with these sort of certain prescribed rules that were generally kept. Of course, there's always abuses, but you weren't just free as a general to dream up this garbage like they did with Sherman, and just as a planned, systematic matter to go through and abuse and wipe out the civilian population and stores and just burn people that you have no idea. For all you know, the house you just burned was kept by people who voted against the secession. You have no idea. It was just indiscriminate destruction and murder.
Right. There was one example that I think is brings it to the heart of the matter. When Madeleine Albright was being interviewed, I believe on 60 Minutes, and she was reminded that 500,000 children starved or died during the sanctions in Iraq. And Albright said, and was asked, do you think that it was worth it? And she said, well, it's kind of a hard decision, but yes, we think it was worth it. Well, right. What if those children here?
What kind of monsters are these people? Who do they think they are to make a decision like that? As though that decision lies in the hands of Madeleine Albright or Bill Clinton or anybody else. Who are they to murder a half a million kids because they don't like the policy? The thinking is just so, it's so crazy and disturbed at this point. I mean, we live in a very sick society where these kinds of things are just accepted. To me, I was always amazed. I know this is not a popular opinion with most people, but I was always amazed this concept of having these thermonuclear weapons. It's like, oh, we have to have them in order to keep them from using them against us. Well, I'm sorry, but me personally, I'm not okay with anybody, certainly not a government that purports to represent me, stockpiling, creating weapons designed to kill millions and millions of people. I'm not okay with that. And if they say, well, it prevents them from launching, I would rather someone launch something on me and be like, okay, well, they launched it on me. If they launch it on me, I'm still not going to turn around and blow them up. And I give people the example all the time of if someone takes a hostage, right? Someone just takes a hostage and they're out in a square and they've got the hostage and say it's a member of your family and you're really not too happy about it. Are you okay with just going in there if you can free the hostage and just simply dropping a bomb to kill everybody in there because there's one guy in there who's doing something you don't like? It's not okay. You can't just kill innocent people because somebody else is doing something. And in our country alone, you have disagreements about who's even in charge. Like, the country is generally split in the vote, you know, kind of 50-50 in the vote, and half the people don't vote. Well, that means whoever's in charge, they definitely don't have the vote of at least half the people who voted. Are we okay just blowing all of them up if you don't support Bush, Obama, Trump, Biden? Well, tons of the people in this country don't support them. What makes you think people who live under what you call a tyrant that you've got these bombs aimed at, they support him. Who says they support him? Maybe they hate the guy too. Like, where's the moral justification to blow up millions of people, regardless of what the person does? I don't know. That doesn't make sense to me. It's not okay with me just to kill innocent people. I don't understand how people are okay with that. You call it a country and a war, and apparently everyone's just okay killing millions of people. It's just weird.
And what happens is that then we have these people whose countries have been totally, totally destroyed. Maybe they have 4% electricity left. People are dying. All the buildings, the infrastructure is gone. There's disease because they've destroyed the dams, and there's feces in all their drinking water. Why does the U.S. think that that's okay? And then when they escape and come to our country or go into Europe, then people wonder, well, gosh, what is going on? We have all these people, and we are accepting phone calls at 800-313-9443. But the other thing too is, no one has ever actually bombed our country. Yes, there was Pearl Harbor, but
was it
FDR,
in our country?
FDR and Roosevelt or FDR and Churchill monitored the progress of the Japanese all the way over here. The Japanese had attempted to surrender numerous times, and they goaded them into coming over. They moved all the good ships away, so they allowed 2,500 U.S. military to be sacrificed, live bait.
Of course. Absolutely.
It just makes me sick.
See, what's so insane to me is this idea that anybody would trust an entity that has no problem killing millions of people. Why do you have weapons that are designed to kill millions of people if you're not ready to kill them? And anybody can see that government is absolutely no concern whatsoever about killing people. I mean, they just call them an enemy, or they sacrifice their own people, and yet somehow people continue to believe the stories. And
right.
I just find it odd. I would say this. Look around at the destruction that's just these insane COVID restrictions have caused on the economy, and all the harm and heartache that's causing. Now imagine that you lived in a country, as you discussed, where they only bomb the infrastructure. Well, they have these smart bombs. Oh, we're not targeting civilians. Okay, well, what are you going to do if they target your water treatment plant, your electricity plant, all your major bridges and roads? All that stuff's blown up and gone. I don't understand. How is that spreading freedom? How do you know in a country, and they always justify it to say, well, Saddam Hussein is a terrible dictator. He's killing and torturing his own people. So the answer is to bomb the people back into the Stone Age. They don't even agree. The narrative itself makes no sense that he's oppressing his people. Well, if he's oppressing his people, how does it make sense to hold them responsible and to blow up and destroy all their infrastructure? Nothing ever makes any sense. But there's nobody on either side of this fake political aisle that comes out and speaks any truth.
Because they're all making money.
That silly line. Yes.
They're making money.
And the people they can't. This is back to that original point. I don't understand how anybody can think someone in government or anybody in mainstream media operating on the television. How can they be on your side? They're not on your side.
Exactly. We do have some callers lining up. Why don't we take a call or two?
Okay.
Okay, we have Andrea in Oklahoma. Andrea? And keep it on the subject. Andrea?
Okay. After the subject is my hair on fire. And my question is, how would you change it? How would you fix it? I mean, Iceland threw their government out. What would we do to get rid of it? Because right now, Biden, according to Michael Rivera, passed the bill, and I went to the grocery store yesterday to get eggs, and everything in Walmart, there was no eggs. And I turned around and went to another grocery store. There was no eggs or milk. I mean, if he's going to cut production of food for our population, of course they're trying to kill us on the front of Republic Broadcasting. There is an article, it's actually a video, and you have to wait for it because once you push play, it takes a minute or two to kick in. But it says you'll never believe what's in the test. They're trying to kill us all off. So,
well,
how would you change it?
And the first thing you have to do, the difference between sort of Iceland and where we are is Iceland is a very, very small place. It's got a few hundred thousand people in the entire country. They all basically live in one city in Reykjavik. And so the key to everything is decentralizing. There's no way to ever fix what people call the United States government. It's a total impossibility. You can't have any system that will ever work and that will be anything other than a tyranny over this many people. It's a total impossibility. The very first step is people have to understand it, to let go of this idea of a huge a country that's about freedom or anything else. You can never, ever be that way because you can never have anything but tyranny when you have this big a government over this many people. It has to be very, very small. Very, very small. You have to break the thing up. The first step is you have to start getting the states who are red. They have to start seceding and forcing the hand of these people so that we can have a smaller group, because the closer something is to you, the easier it is to control. That's why these small local governments, they're corrupt, of course they do. They try to do stuff, but they can't do much harm because they're not very big, and they're very easy to watch. They're just very easy to watch, and as soon as you have something as large as the United States government, it's a total impossibility. It's a fantasy that you could ever control it. It's just not possible, and there is no system. Forget the fact that our system's no good. There's no system to be implemented that will ever work when you have 330 million people. Even if you have 10 million people, it's too many people. You're never going to get agreement about much of anything. So the only options are to massively decentralize, and the government has to have very, very limited scope. See, we're told the United States government has a limited scope. You've got a limited document, limited government, all this other stuff. It's not limited. I ask people all the time, can you name anything that the government couldn't pass a law about? I mean, they literally take money and they simply send it to people overseas. They take money from me and they simply hand it to somebody else in whatever amounts they care to. They're literally doing that by the trillions of dollars now. There's no way to ever control a system that's that big, and there's no way to prevent a system that has sort of access to the amount of people they do and they claim to have authority over. There's no way to ever keep it under control. So the very first step is you have to get people to understand that it's not a matter of fixing the government, getting a new, better government in there, getting new, better people in there. That fundamentally, it has to be way smaller and much more limited in scope. And that's just the reality. And most people, they aren't willing to accept that. But I've told people countless times that if you just run the numbers on what the founders had kind of agreed to, just putting aside all the consent problems and everything else, it was roughly one representative in Congress for every approximately 5,000 voters out in the public. That's what it was. And now, since almost nobody could vote, and now it's roughly one representative for 750,000 people. The only ones who really can't vote are minors. And so you can't scale something up that large and ever have it work. And when the founders were doing that, the government was so teeny tiny. I've told people many times that the Attorney General of the United States kept a full-time practice going until the 1850s because there was nothing for him to do. That's how small the government was. There was no DOJ, FBI, DEA, ATF, no Department of Justice. Think about that. None of these agencies existed. The president himself didn't even have
much of a staff. Most of the presidents brought in their own cousins and nephews and stuff to work as their assistants. Now the first lady has an entire staff. And so the government that they had when they agreed to this constitution, it was so teeny tiny, and the representation was better than what you would get in the smallest town. Think about one representative for 5,000 voters. In my town, just my town itself, there's a 250,000 people. You don't get anything close to that. You get one representative. It's about for every 60,000 people. This is the smallest thing. This is the local city council. And so step one is it has to be decentralized. It has to be decentralized. You can never have something this big.
All righty. Thank you. Let's take Mark in Georgia. Mark.
Hello, can you hear me? Hello,
yes,
here you are.
Yes.
I'm going to be meeting with the Sons of Confederate Veterans this coming Tuesday, and I intend to apply for membership because I happen to know that my forefathers started to march against the Blue Bellies over the issue of states' rights a long, long time ago. And I know that Lincoln was a liar and a traitor, and every time he invoked the word rebel or rebellion, he was lying. As you pointed out, he did not free any of the slaves in the Union slaveholding states. And how convenient that it also conveniently, the people who believe it was all about slavery don't want to deal with the fact that in the Confederate territory that had been subjugated at that point of the war, the slave labor was being used by Union forces to build forts, dig latrines, and other such things, labor-intensive type things. So, we all need to be skeptical because there's plenty of reason to say, by default, I apply skepticism to everything. It's like, maybe that's true, plausible, means maybe it's true, maybe it's not. But people need to understand that the official account of history always needs to be treated with skepticism. And, as you were mentioning the A-bomb, you know that the Japanese only had one condition when the atom bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. And that one condition was that in the Shinto religion, their emperor was like a god to them. The only thing they really insisted on is that their emperor be treated with respect, that he not be put on trial, that they don't threaten to execute him or imprison him or put him to shame. And that was, and after they dropped the bomb and had fun with their little toy, then they said, oh, well, we'll let you, the emperor, remain in a ceremonial position so he could save face. It's like, now you say that. What happened a month ago when, you know, the Japanese could have surrendered before May when the Germans had been forced into subjugation, and all along the Germans were saying, look, we'll make peace with the British, we'll make peace with the French, we'll make peace with the Americans, but we cannot make peace with the Soviets because they won't honor their word. Sounds like we're coming up on a break.
Okay. Thank you. Do you want to hold over? All righty. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me.
All righty. Let's get back to our question. Mark and Georgia said, was talking about the Japanese. They attempted to surrender four times, but the U.S. government had these bombs, and so they rejected these offers to surrender because they claimed to have these bombs that they wanted to use, which they used or not. Some people say they just firebombed. Some people say, you know, they don't have a big bomb. But anyway, Mark, did you have some further question for Legal Man? Because we do have some other people on the list.
Are they giving thoughts? Still
there? Yeah.
Can you hear me? I've been giving thoughts with what I call a restoration amendment, which would have to be some way of getting it out to people that we need to get back to where the government is obliged to, on the federal level, a non-controversial understanding of morality, golden rule, and leave the controversy to each of the several states. And we need to have a Leviticus 25 jubilee where we acknowledge that the criminal banksters did not actually lend us anything, and that any change to the Constitution that came about by defeat or duress is null and void without any lawful legitimacy. And basically what I have in mind is to reinstate the militia, with, you know, whether or not you want to own guns or carry guns, It's an issue of holding the government accountable, like having, you want to be an accountant, fine. We, you know, the militia can include accountants that, that audit the government at every level and make sure that they're not misappropriating funds.
Let's have legal man respond to what you've already said. Who's going to hold the government accountable? Legal man? Is legal man still there?
I'm here. Are you there?
Hey, legal man.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess you guys weren't hearing me. As far as holding the government to account, ultimately, unfortunately, that's what's called a Barnum statement. A Barnum statement is something that sounds great. It sounds like it's a very specific thing, but really it only has a very specific meaning to each individual person. There's no getting agreement on it. The question would be, what does it mean to hold the government to account, right? I mean, how, what would that look like? And this is the problem when you have these giant governments. Everybody has a different idea. We right now have a system that supposedly holds the government to account. You take it through this kangaroo system of government courts. At the end, some government employees write an opinion. And then that's supposedly what it means to hold into account. I hear other people say that holding to account is having a term limits or having a recall. Or all of these things, it's the question is, what does it mean to hold somebody to account? What does it mean to hold the government to account? And I make shows about the fact that,
for one.
Okay, well, again.
Four times in the book of Deuteronomy.
When Mark, allow legal man to answer your question.
Yes, all right.
Yeah, that's a good example that for you, that's what it means to hold them to account. And I think it's a good example of the fact that you can't get agreement with people about what most of these terms mean, and that's why the key to all of this is decentralizing, because the fewer people you have, the easier it is to reach agreement, and the fewer things the government's in charge of with the fewer group of people, then the greater chance there is to agree. Like, you're going to have very, very little agreement if, in fact, there's some invading force coming and they announce that they have bad intentions and they plan on killing and enslaving us all. It would be pretty easy to get agreement that we need to mount a defense against that. The exact nature of it would be maybe up to question, but there'd be no doubt that everybody would be on board. And there's no doubt that everybody's on board with the fact that, look, we need to have a way to get around. We need some basic roads. We need some infrastructure. It's easy to get agreement. The problem comes when you start expanding the scope of the government out over a larger and larger group of people. It gets more and more difficult to reach any kind of agreement. And this idea that we're going to, quote, hold the government accountable when you have a government over hundreds and hundreds of millions of people is a total impossibility. And you'll never convince enough people that holding them to account means going and looking in Deuteronomy and giving them an eye for an eye or anything else. You'll never be able to get agreement because you can't get basic agreement about even something between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. You can't get agreement about hardly anything. I can hardly get agreement at my dinner table. And so that's why I would say that focusing the discussion on trying to make sure we decentralize, because decentralization means that each person has a greater say and it's much less likely to be much of a dispute. And to the extent you can't decentralize too much, the next best thing to do is to require a much greater agreement prior to the time anything could be enacted. One of the things you could do is, if we just simply had the same crappy, crooked government we have now, just that, and it was, nothing changed at all, except that you had to get at least 85% of the voting population had to vote and find for you before you could be elected, and 85% of the people who've been elected had to vote in favor of the bill. Just that alone would eliminate virtually all of the government action, because you can't get even 85% to agree to almost anything the government does. And so one of the ways that they screw us is this fantasy about a majority, that they've raised this idea of 50.1% to be this idea that that's sufficient to get agreement, and therefore they win and they get to impose themselves. Well, one of the simple things we could do even before we even got another season is just to jack up the percentage you have to win by. And what would end up happening is there'd be very few people. You can increase the amount of people you have to even have what would be considered a sufficient number in the House in order for them to do anything. So you'd have to have a quorum. You raise it up, you say, look, you got to have 90% as a quorum, and you got to get 85% or 90% agreement. Well, if you just did that, the government would not be able to do pretty much anything, which solves my problem, because I don't want the government doing much of anything. And if you got agreement of, say, 80% of the people, you're not going to have that much division in the country. If 80% of the people agree to something, it's so overwhelming. There's almost no position in the government where that kind of agreement's reached. And so the problem comes with this 50% garbage, where they then jerry-rig up the vote. I mean, you can see that the solutions are not to talk in terms of these, of holding them to account or anything like that, because this statement doesn't really actually have an enforceable meaning. And I think the key is to reshape people's discussion into things that are tangible and are objective, like these kinds of numbers and reducing and decentralizing and increasing the quorums and the requirements before anything could ever be, quote, passed. I think those are steps that people can get behind.
Okay, Mark, we're going to cut you loose, as we do have some other callers. Thank you for your phone call. Let's take Nancy in California. Nancy?
Hi, this has been, your programs today have been excellent, Deanna. I was a Trump supporter, and you're convincing me that maybe I was totally deceived. I would like to hear from Lawman, who I assume is an attorney.
Yes, I've been for 30 years.
You are so logical. I love listening to you guys, your conversation. Tell me what you think about Trump.
Well, you know, I personally, I like Trump, okay? I don't vote for him because I don't vote. I haven't voted in decades. I'm pretty convinced he's not on my side. Whether or not he could ever be gullible enough to do the kinds of things he does, I don't know. I think he's a funny guy. I'd like to have a drink with him. I know he doesn't drink, but he seems entertaining, and I think a lot of people confuse the fact that he's very likable and entertaining, and he dumps on the press as confusion that he's actually on the side of the people. When I look at what Trump did, and I gave the guy the benefit of the doubt, when I looked at what he actually did, I said, okay, well, still trillions and trillions of dollars of spending, totally unconstitutional. He didn't fire all these losers in the DOJ and the FBI, which are both just totally unconstitutional agencies anyway, but he could have. He could have vetoed all sorts of stuff. He allows the Department of Education and Energy. He doesn't come out and tell people that these things are unconstitutional. See, he had a huge amount of popular support. And for me, the last straw with the guy was reached very early on when he claimed he was going to lock all these people up, which a lot of people believe. And he moved in, and even before, as soon as the election was over, prior to the time he was even sworn in, he immediately said, hey, the Clintons, he's not going to go after them. They're good people. He's going to leave them alone. Okay, well, that's not okay with me. You know, not one single arrest, all these excuses. He hired a guy like, you know, Jeff Sessions. That was a very questionable move, right? He took someone out of the Senate with a very slim majority that he had, took him out, brought him in. Jeff Sessions is a lifelong piece of crap politician who didn't do anything. He didn't do anything, and then he ends up leaving, and in fact, he lost the seat. And I heard endlessly about how that was a setup to get him up for the election fraud. Remember all the election fraud in 2016? He didn't have his Department of Justice go after anybody. He allowed those people to stay in office. And so I looked at the record. In fact, I did a whole show on the fact that what people get confused with is it's very, very easy to confuse people with things you say. And Trump says all the right things. But then when you compare it to what he actually does, it's like, well, hold on, that doesn't fit. I mean, if you just look at the results of have we ever been placed in a worse position after somebody was in office? They say, oh, well, he couldn't control the virus. Okay, well, I agree.
to the extent there is a virus, whatever it is, he pushes this nonsense about it being a China virus. I don't believe this crap is some kind of China virus for 1 second. Why are we set into that narrative? If Trump was really on my side, he would have said, look, this looks awfully suspicious to me. I don't know what it is, but we're going to look into it. It looks like a bioweapon. Could be a lot of bioweapons. Maybe it's coming out of Fort Detrick, out of people that don't like me. We don't know what it is, but no. The narrative has to be set immediately. It's China. It's a virus. Okay, I got you. So he didn't actually keep any of the stuff open. And that declaration of emergency is what screwed us. And if he'd been really on my side, he never would have declared a national emergency. First of all, the word emergency doesn't appear in the Constitution, and there is no such thing as a provision in the Constitution which provides that the federal government gets all sorts of additional powers in case of emergency. That's not something that's actually in the Constitution. That's a made-up thing. It comes from a statute that Congress wrote that's totally and completely unconstitutional. There's nothing in the Constitution. You think the people who wrote the Constitution were unaware of something called an emergency? They had emergency. They know what an emergency is. If they wanted to give the government the ability to acquire all these rights and powers and authorities in, quote, case of emergency, they would have put it in the Constitution. Well, they didn't. So the very fact that he allows this concept of declaring a national emergency, which in itself is a totally unconstitutional made-up thing, showed me right away that this guy's not on my side. That was the absolute final straw for me. Not only did he allow the thing to run on for months and months and months, he renewed it in October.
before the election. Do you think he was ignorant, or was he just deceiving us?
I think that's an open question, and I genuinely believe that I've said on Twitter and to my friends, and I think I've said in my podcast multiple times, look, I'm going to wait and see what happens to the guy over the next year. Okay, if this guy ends up being ruined and in prison and everything else, okay, then I guess maybe he really was this naive. I don't know how anybody could be, but maybe he could be that naive. I think it could be a combination. It could be that, you know, the man lived a life that it's very difficult for someone like me who's gone and seen just all sorts of terrible stuff and gotten screwed multiple times by courts again and again, for me to step into someone's mind who's lived the life of a billionaire, who's been bailed out by banks, who's had multiple business bankruptcies. It doesn't make any difference. He just lives like a king and has for 40 years. It's very difficult for me to know what he might think. It's possible. It's possible. Yeah.
How about his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Jared Kushner's ties to Netanyahu and the fact there's that angle as well.
Look at that. It's very suspicious not to mention all the people he hired.
Sheldon Adelson, I understand, funded his campaign, and Sheldon Adelson was not to be trusted, so...
How could he not know? See, this is the thing. It's like, well, okay, I mean, who could possibly trust that a man this naive and gullible, who's literally surrounding himself, Bill Barr? Like, that guy he's the worst kind of deep state rat. All he surrounded himself with was deep state rats. And it's like, okay, if I have to believe that he's this naive and gullible and out of it and doesn't know any of these people, it's like, well, he's never going to be able to help me anyway because he doesn't know what he's doing. You can't fight the deep state if you can't even identify the deep state. That's hopeless. But I do think it is a possibility that he was somewhat well-intentioned, okay, saw a lot of bluster, but man, maybe his heart was kind of in the right place, and he genuinely didn't understand kind of what he was up against. I could see that. You know, that's possible. It's a stretch to me at this point, but it's possible he kind of got in there. But why would he keep hiring these deep state rats? And then
I've got an answer. I think I've got an answer. Number one, his father was a Birch Society supporter. And according to Revelo P. Oliver, Revelo P. Oliver was one of the founders of the Birch Society, and Revelo P. Oliver ended up resigning because he did an investigation and found out that Robert Welsh, the founder of the Birch Society, was controlled opposition. The
right.
Rockefeller or Rothschild had bought his candy company. He was set up to move the conservative, you know, constitutionalists to waste away their time and their efforts, number two. Number three, Revel O.P. Oliver actually, he resigned from the Birch Society, and William F. Buckley had said that Revel O.P. Oliver was one of the most erudite men he'd ever met. So I think that Trump, if he was impacted by his father and his father's thinkings and knowledge, I think that he has been led astray by controlled opposition, but he was doing some of the right things, like the environmental stuff, defunding organizations. I think Trump has been betrayed and led astray.
It's always a possibility. It's always a possibility. Again, I go back to the point that if you're a savvy operator like he has been, or at least purports to be for all these years, how do you make a living in an industry as corrupt as commercial real estate and development and not understand something as basic as controlled opposition and being suspicious of the people around you? I mean,
right.
how can you be both? How can you be this brilliant businessman and also be this unbelievably naive such and such? Okay, well, my explanation that the possibility is that he's such an incredible narcissist, he just doesn't see it. It is a possibility, okay? That is a possibility. And
He doesn't fit in with these people. He doesn't smoke, take drugs, drink.
That's right.
I mean, he's clean compared to
right.
the other slime balls.
Clean in certain areas, dirty
yes,
in others.
That's the whole thing. Right. It's disconnected, right? There's all these things that don't really fit. And so,
right.
you know, he doesn't drink. And, okay, that's fine, but Kushner, that's a pretty weird connection. You look who runs his companies. These are pretty bad kinds of
Kushner wasn't his choice. Kushner married his daughter.
I'm going to cut you loose because we do have some other callers, but I do appreciate your phone call and your views. So,
thank you.
Alrighty, take care. And there was the 10 lawsuits. He may not drink, but he did have some parental lawsuits that he had to pay off.
Exactly.
Which are, you know, so you don't drink, but you just do children.
That's right. I mean, everybody's got different stuff.
Okay. Let's take Laura in Colorado. Laura?
Deanna, thanks for taking my call. Your guest today is absolutely fabulous. And
he's a genius.
Timing,
I love him.
Well, and I think your timing for having him on your program is absolutely perfect. So
Thank you.
I wanted to make some points, and I will try to do it as quickly as I can so the guest has an opportunity to respond. The number one problem that we have in the country, and your guest is completely right, this is a huge, oversized, monstrous, it's like a gigantic octopus with numerous tentacles. This is the biggest problem of all. But your next biggest problem is we have a cowardly, tucked out population that is so manipulated by fear, because all they can see is that they want their stuff and they want their life and they love being entertained. And even though they all absolutely love to embrace what they might understand as the Constitution, most of them are totally oblivious to it, but they like the benefits, but they're not one damn bit willing to sacrifice to keep the Constitution or to have it restored and have the country restored to the way that it used to be when it was a very small country with a very small population. And so I have absolute zero respect for 99.9% of the American people. I would not help a damn one of them, no matter what was going on. because they don't help each other. All they do is fight over petty, ridiculous things. I live in an area where neighbors just call the police and snitch on other neighbors. And, you know, I just got no respect for those people at all. And I've watched it go on. It's just disgusting to me. We have an issue going on right now. We've got a Marxist communist that has walked into the White House. We have a majority of Marxist communists in our government. I see the exact same thing happening right now that happened in Russia a little over 100 years ago. But in our country, there's just no excuse for the stupidity and ignorance. We have the internet. There is plenty of materials out there to be read that talk about our freedom. There's people like G. Edward Griffin. They've been talking about a lot of these problems for decades and writing books. So there's no excuse for the ignorance and stupidity at all. In Russia, long ago, there wasn't phones. There was very little telegraph communications and things. But if you look at the people and compare the people, they haven't changed one bit. They still want to believe that these people who are taking over the government are kind and benevolent. And we've been told recently, I mean, the Marxist communists that have now taken over the government have bragged about how they are now going to go after people. I talked to a realtor in Ecuador the other day, and he told me his phone has been ringing off the hook. Apparently, there is just massive amounts of people wanting to sell their homes and their properties, go to third world countries where, you know, they can take their money and go and live a comfortable life. Of course, a third world country can turn into a Marxist communist mess, just like what we have here now in our country.
Okay, Laura, let Legal Man respond to what you've already said.
Sure.
Yeah, you make a lot of good points, and we're in agreement. I mean, what's going on is just typical Bolshevik tactics that they use everywhere, all the time. They're textbook. And what I would say about it is that, you know, it points out the problem of attempting to try to control something that's this large is totally impossible. And I like to show people that to kind of give them kind of big picture items, which is that the things we're told, they don't make sense with what we're shown. And that would be an example of this would be that we have the federal government is a limited government under the Constitution. But somehow the largest government the world has ever known is somehow supported, balanced on the head of a pen of a document that purports to create a limited government. It's like, well, how could you have created a bigger government? So something doesn't make sense here, and it goes back to the same kind of thing of people don't like Joe Biden. Okay, well, he's a joke. I mean, he's a dementia patient. He didn't even actually campaign. He just stayed in his basement because every time he went out, nobody would even say hi to the guy. But the concept of trying to get the right person in there or get the wrong person in there, get some different person in there, get change of person in there, it avoids the fundamental issue, which is that there's nobody, no government, no set of people up there should ever have the ability to do any of the things that people fear. See, you can't have a situation where we have a supposed government, quote, under the Constitution. And then I hear all the time how, well, they're just doing all these things that are unconstitutional, and they're bringing in, Marxism, and they're bringing all these, well, how? They don't have any authority. They don't have any authority. The only authority they have at all, to the extent they have any authority, comes from the Constitution. Does the Constitution allow the government to institute Marxist policies? If it does, then the Constitution doesn't limit the government. And if it doesn't, then the government doesn't have any right to institute these Marxist policies. And it's not a matter of having to worry about who wins the presidency and who wins the Congress. I've told people again and again, if the Constitution actually limited the government, as we're told, and if we actually had all these rights that we're told, freedom of this and freedom of that and all this, if any of those things were true, we wouldn't have to care. You wouldn't have to care. Nobody would care who was elected and who won. Because whatever their position was, they wouldn't have the authority. They wouldn't have the capability to institute any of the things. See, it's not that the ideas are bad. Of course, communism makes no damn sense. It's idiotic. The problem is that there's a system set up that people act as though we must obey. See, that's the problem, is that if all you do, the reality of what we live in now is we're told it's a limited government, but the reality we live in is if you just lose one vote from some rigged up, scammed up vote like they just had, well, now they just get to institute anything they want. Well, I thought it was a limited government. See, those two things don't fit together. It shouldn't matter who's up there. We all have equal rights, limited government, very limited number of things it can do. It doesn't matter who's up there because they're not empowered to do anything. And that's why, to me, it's such a battle of the mind, that people have to switch out of this concept that if we just lose an election, X, Y, and Z happens, because that doesn't make sense. The government doesn't have the authority to do it. And as long as people believe that just because we lost the election and Joe Biden's up there and they pass something, we have to follow it, we're screwed.
All righty, we're going to a quick break. Laura, thank you very much for your phone call. We'll be right back. And we are back with our guest, legal man. And this whole situation with Marxism, Marx and Engels loved Lincoln. I consider the so-called Civil War as the beginning point of a Marxist revolution that was successful and has been going on and growing since that point. We do have one last caller. Let's take John in California, but be very quick because we have limited time. John.
Yes, hi, Deanna. It's a great topic, and your guest, Mr. Legal Man, thank you very much for all that information. I know it sounds controversial to some, but you hit it on the head when you said what's the government and its country, it's become so big and bloated, and we the people, you know, we've had these through the Constitution rights that we've been asleep and just did not follow when these things happen, and we've brought it on ourselves. And if we don't wake up anymore and get onto it and keep up with it and say, you know, this isn't right or that, yeah, we need to do it, not some government people or even people we bring in. We don't like them, you take them out. That's what we have the right to do. So I appreciate all that info, and keep going on it. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, John.
Appreciate it.
Yes. Well, 2 hours went by very rapidly.
It always does, doesn't it?
It does. And let's have you make some closing remarks about whatever you'd like to say. I totally enjoyed our program today. You're terrific.
I do too. I always enjoy it. Thank you for having me again. I always appreciate it. I mean, I like like-minded people. The reality is, you know, there's probably more people that kind of would be persuadable to our side than we're led to know. But, we have to get the word out. And, you know, your program, great. I have my podcast is short. It's about 20-ish minutes each time. It's fairly easy to share. As a result, if people like what I say, they should go listen to it. It's called The Quash, and they can find it. Like I said, do any kind of podcast search, you'll find it. If you want to find me, I'm LegalMan@US Law Review on Twitter. And I give that because we have to kind of stick together. They're doing everything they can to deplatform people, take them off social media, prevent us from meeting any place. Because the ideas we have that you share, that I share, there's something that a lot of people agree with, which is genuine kind of freedom and liberty to the maximum extent possible without telling other people what to do. And in order for that to work and in order to move forward, we have to be able to have an open discussion. And they're just making sure that people aren't allowed to have an open discussion. I mean, they are doing everything they can to make sure the discussion is narrowed into what they call the Overton window, and they just keep this discussion within a very tight range, and they never hear things like, well, we could decentralize. We should massively increase the percentage required in order to win an election, in order to pass something in Congress, in order to get a bill through. If we just did simple things like that, if people were aware of it, heard about it, you get a lot of agreement about it, but you have to open the conversation up to other things. And like all that discussion we had about the Civil War, you know, you're not allowed to have an open and honest discussion because you're just shouted down as a racist. That's right. The bottom line.
Right. And your website is thetruthaboutthelaw.com. Legal Man, thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Okay. Take care.
Take care.
Alrighty. Bye-bye. And we'll talk with you next week. Take care. Have a great week. Bye-bye.